This has something to do with two approaches to formalizing perturbative quantum field theory, which emerged recently. So the nets bit, actually, what I mean by nets, I mean nets of operator algebras. This goes back a very long way, in fact, to algebraic quantum field theory by Haag and Kassler. So I think 64 is the right number, more or less. Somebody can correct me. But there was a new development a bit later on, which is called locally covariant quantum field theory. And this was the work around late 90s, early 2000s, was by the following people, Renetti, Frenhagen, Fesch. So this was somehow categorifying, well, at least rephrasing in the language of category theory what Haag and Kassler did before. And finally, what is the most recent and what I'm going to talk about is introducing a very nice formalism into the game, which is the BV formalism. So BV version of the above. And this is around 2011, and this was my work with Klaus Frenhagen. So Frenhagen, myself. Okay, so that's this part. And now factorization algebras. Well, the relevant part of the framework is actually also very recent work of Kevin and Owen William. So this is also, I think, around 2011, if I'm not wrong, William Costello, or Costello William, rather. Sorry. Just thinking about Owen at this point. Well, this guy is the co-author of what I'm going to talk about right now. So we were talking since 2011 about what do we have in common, and we found out that, yes, we have something in common. So in fact, there is a nice relation between the two approaches, and thank goodness there is just one physics, one quantum field theory. These things have to agree somehow. But in mathematics, that's not so clear. So was still a relief. Okay, so let me just give you some concrete definitions. That was the blah blah part of things. Let me see. Oh, do I have to jump to get to that one, or just pull this string? No. Or is there an easier way of getting to it? Okay. Right. So let's start with the AQFT side, because this is probably less familiar to you. So I will spend a bit more time saying this. So let's start with a definition. What do I mean by a quantum field theory model? This will be crucial. So QFT, a QFT model. Okay, so I will work here on Lorentzian manifolds. Well, the original framework of Kevin and Owen was formulated on Euclidean manifolds. This does matter, but it won't matter for this talk. So this talk, I'm going to work in Lorentzian only. So on a spacetime M, so this is Lorentzian, is a functor from, okay, so I will consider some family of opens in my spacetime. Typically, one would take all opens, I'm going to restrict to a certain class, which is nicely compatible with the causal structure on my manifold. So from something which I called cos of M, so this is certain family of opens that are causally convex. And what do I mean by causally convex? Okay, so causal structure tells you about different kinds of directions in your spacetime. So there are space-like curves, there are time-like curves, there are null curves, that's some basic geometry. And I want my opens to have the property that if a causal curve starts and ends in my open, then it's all contained in one open, so it cannot leave it at any point. So this means contains all its causal curves.
Is this something I have to know about all of M to measure?
Sorry?
Is this something I have to know about all of M to measure? It's not something I can do just internal to the geometry of
you. What do you mean internal?
Well, if there's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if all I know is my open looks insert.
Sure. Oh, yes, yes, because they are all treated as subsets of M. So yeah, it's all relative to the geometry of M. That's how I see it. Right. So from this to, and now, okay, one could do various things. In the first approach, I want the quantum field theory to assign me algebras of operators to a subregion of spacetime. So I will go to just look what was my notation. So this is star algebras over nuclear locally convex topological vector spaces. That's a mouthful. Just topological spaces, vector spaces, which are relatively nice. Top vector spaces with nice topology. And this nice topology in particular means that I want a unique monoidal structure. So with nice topology and unique tensor product. It's gonna be important, okay? So that's this. I also decorated with a little h bar, which means that I would consider formal power series in these guys. So this goes for formal power series. Okay, and in algebraic quantum field theory, in its original formulation, one wants the morphisms in this category of algebras to be injective. This is usually not a great thing to do, but because I want to first present things as they were originally, then let me add that superscript here, which means with injective morphisms. Okay. Sorry. What?
So an algebra, the multiplication map in an algebra is never an injective map.
No. I mean embeddings of algebra, so morphism in the category.
You put a little injective outside the parentheses.
Oh well, fine. Yes. If that makes you feel better, yes. Yeah. Yes. That's true.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right, because it's about algebras, not about topological vector space. Good, very good. So let me call this functor something. Functor A from this to that. Satisfying some properties. Okay, finally I came to that. So this was just the background knowledge. Such that there's one very important axiom. I mean, the rest of the axioms you can forget. But there's one which is really making this work. So this is Einstein causality. Holds. What does it mean? So it means if I have O1, O2, which are in that family of causally convex guys, which are space-like. And I will abbreviate it like this. This is a very visual way of writing it because, you know, you can put a sort of light cone in between them. That are space-like. A of O1, well, the commutator of all the guys assigned to O1 with all the guys assigned to O2 vanishes. And this happens in some bigger algebra which is assigned to O that contains both O1 and O2. So we're O1, O2 are contained in O. Fine. So that's the quantum theory. Now, classical theory is very similar to that. So let me just go quickly. So classical theory. So this is a functor. Let me see what's the nice way of writing it. So I'm trying to do math frac style on the board. This is the canonical way of doing it. It's a German script, which used to be the way that the Germans would write. So it does exist as an alphabet. So this is P, in case you don't know. So this goes from this to, and now I want to have Poisson algebras, and everything goes the same. But of course, H bar is not good for anything. Now, Einstein causality is the same. Replace the commutator by the Poisson bracket. So such that Einstein causality holds. Okay, and now for both of them, I can also say something about, a version of local constancy. So there is another axiom which I can, there is a remnant of the other talk. Actually, it's a good thing. That's a path integral. It's related. Right, so there is another thing. So I say that the functor A or P satisfies the time slice axiom. I consider a special kind of causally convex set such that which contains a Cauchy surface of my spacetime. So, maybe here I would have to assume that this spacetime has Cauchy surfaces. So maybe let's just right here assume that M has Cauchy surfaces.
Do you mean global hyperbolicity?
I do. That's exactly what it means. So it means that it's globally hyperbolic. Lovely class of spacetimes. Right, so if I have a neighborhood of my Cauchy surface, so this is contains my Cauchy surface. Then my algebra, or rather, yeah, so let's say this contains a Cauchy surface of some region O. O, then A of N is isomorphic to A of O for, well, the quantum theory, or for the classical theory, the same P of N is isomorphic to P of O. Okay. Great, so this is what it means. And now this axiom, this property, is going to be crucial for the comparison. So we looked at the case of the free scalar field where this property does hold, and this was one of the crucial steps of the argument. Okay, so that finishes the first chunk of definitions. Now, this is what you would hear from a typical AQFT person who is not adverse to functors if you ask them what's algebraic quantum field theory. Now, there is another structure which is important, which appears if you're fed up with free theories and want to construct something interacting. A very useful guy is a time-ordered product. And there was some puffing to growl on the board before. So time-ordered product is actually related to Pav integrals. But if you want to hear about this, you probably should be going to the conference which is going on this week. But let me just say a few words and then give you mathematical definition. So to introduce interaction, it is useful to have time-ordered products. So if you have a physics background, then you might have heard of things like Dyson formula and the interaction picture for quantum mechanics. So this is sort of like that. It's trying to make these ideas precise in the QFT context. So related to the Dyson formula for interacting fields. Okay, so what it is mathematically? Well, it's a way to construct a commutative product out of your non-commutative structure A. So mathematically, this is realized again as a functor so now it just goes again from the same category to commutative star algebras. Here, and there are some properties it has to satisfy, so such that. So first I want to identify AT of O with A of O as vector spaces. So, 1 AT of O is A of O as vector spaces. Okay, so that's part of the story. Second, this commutative product is actually related, should be related to the classical commutative product. So AT of O is the same as, as P of O as commutative algebras. Again, not everything, but some of it. The third has something to do with why is it time ordered. So three, so if suppose that we have now two algebra elements, so for F localized in A of O1, G localized in A of O2, such that O1 can do it this or the other way. So let's say that O1 is in the future. Of O2. I have these identifications as vector spaces, so that means there are some natural transformations. For the simplicity of notation, I would skip these natural transformations and just write the following. So F time ordered G, so F is in the future, so G comes first, is the same as F star G. So this product belongs to A, and this is the commutative product which belongs to A T. Okay, so let me call it maybe this 3A and 3B. Now, if I flip these things around, so if O2 is in the future of O1, then these things flip around. So F time ordered G is G star F. Again, this is a very particular property of these time ordered products. And this actually will allow me later on to reconstruct the star product from the factorization product. Okay, so that's the background. Now, okay, I think most of you are familiar with Kevin and Owen work, but let me just put the definitions down. Concretely, so the Costello-Gwilliam approach so here there are two definitions. So classical field theory . So this is going to be described by some factorization algebra, and in fact, well, it has something to do with Poisson. So it's one shifted Poisson algebra P in factorization algebras. Okay, so that's the classical theory. I would prefer to keep on writing on this side. And quantum, well, instead of having something valued in Poisson algebras, we have some extra deformation going on. So a quantum theory A is the same, but let's write it this way, is a Bellingson-Drinfeld B D algebra in factorization algebras. That's a very brief way of stating this. And there are some similarities you can imagine. So there are some functors. This works on all opens of your manifold. I'm working on some class of opens, but this is not the problem. I can always restrict that. So now I want to convince you that if I restrict these two structures to my causally convex opens, I can reconstruct the net and the other way around. So that will be the comparison result. Okay, so sorry for going with the speed of light. It's always a lot of stuff to say. Okay, so what's the statement? So that point three statement of the results. And we proved it for the free scalar field without renormalization for now. So scalar field without, maybe before renormalization. Okay, so first theorem, which you can kind of expect by what I just said. This functor and, well, these two functors and the functors from algebraic quantum field theory give the same thing as far as vector spaces go. So, P, actually with this is maybe even better. So this restricted to causally convex opens is, so there is a natural transformation from this one to, P. And, this is almost an isomorphism and almost goes into steps. So is a isomorphism. This is the first almost, and the second almost is up to completion. So somebody has to be completed in order for this to be an isomorphism. So in fact, one can then show, going to the cohomology on this side, here there is not much cohomology to go to. So just write it this way. But they need completion on this side. So, okay, maybe just not to upset Theo too much. We have completion here. Maybe that's more the right way of saying this. So this is a natural iso. This is even better. This is as commutative algebras. Iso as commutative algebras. So Poisson structure is a different matter. Okay, so the second statement is then for the quantum case.
Take homology and then
take homology. Yeah, right. I would rather do the other thing. You're right. Yes, but I do the other thing. It's made for taller people than I am. yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's what it is. Okay, so let's take the cohomology complete. Maybe I just actually want to do that.
So you want the cohomology, you want the completion, et cetera, parentheses. That's
that's what I wanted.
This. Okay, this is now stable, I think. All right, so the theorem 2 is easier because now I know what to write. So A goes to A, obviously, is also the same quasi-iso up to completion, and the same game can be played here. Completion, and this is A, but now this is just as vector spaces. All the products don't work as vector spaces. Okay, now you want to hear something about algebraic structures because this is, I mean, this is non-trivial, but it's very predictable because, well, we both try to characterize spaces of solutions to some linear equations of motion. So what can possibly go wrong? These have to agree as vector spaces. But I think the more interesting part is the algebraic structures where this was not obvious that these coincide. So in fact, one can do more. And here I'm going to use the time slice property. So I'm going to restrict even further, I'm going to restrict all these functors to that neighborhood of the Cauchy surface. So now restrict A to, well, let's say cos of n. So this is the tubular neighborhood of a Cauchy surface. Okay. And then in that situation, I can actually map the algebraic structures. So this then lifts to a map of algebra. So this I also have to restrict as algebras.
What does a tubular neighborhood mean? Like,
well, it means that you're going just a bit in the time-like direction. And time slice. It's a time slice.
It's like you take second Cauchy surface and you actually include the
I could do two other Cauchy surfaces not very far away and then sandwich my sigma between them. So something like that.
But is there a particular choice of the how those are, like, I mean, the time data? Like, is there this, you know, like, in for example, in ADM, you specify additional control data that actually define you the direction of the shift?
No, I mean, this is, so the point, the point is that this is locally constant in time, so it doesn't matter. These are all isomorphic algebras.
Okay.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Take your favorite.
Also, it's globally, globally Hamiltonian.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Globally hyperbolic. So this is N.
Well, you're saying so by 2 plus what you told us in the...
Sorry?
By theorem 2 plus what you told us in the previous slides...
Yes.
I don't know what you mean. The factorization A is time slice.
Yeah. So for this comparison to work, both the factorization algebra bit has to be locally constant in the time-like direction, and the AQFT bit has to obey the time slice axiom. So this is where the connection is. So there are three theorems. And let's see how many proofs I can manage to deliver in half an hour. Possibly 4 proofs. Right. So, proof. Proof of comparison theorems. And this is joined with Owen. And the paper is almost ready in the sense that it should appear on the archive within days. But okay, well, you have to be patient. As long as it's not wrong, then, that would be bad. Okay, so let's start with the model, because I come from physics, so I just do models. So I looked at the concrete model, I made calculation, I convinced myself that this is true, and then Owen found an abstract reason why it's true. So I will give you the model, Owen will give you an abstract reason. Which is very neat. Right, so what do we have? So we have first the space of field configurations. Wild-free scalar field, right? So what can go wrong? So I will denote it as E of M is smooth functions on the manifold. So, well, M is a manifold with some metric, real valued. Okay, there are also compactly supported counterparts. So D of M is compactly supported, guys. And equations of motion, again, free scalar field. So equations of motion. P phi equals zero, phi is in my configuration space, and P is the Klein-Gordon operator up to a sine. There is a chance that all the sine mistakes in the paper canceled out, so that there is a consistent sine at the end, but that, again, is something to be seen. So what I'm interested in the first instance, is the space of solutions to these equations of motion. And in order to simplify things on the technical level, the first approach, my goal is to look at the space of observables, so functions on the solution space. But I want to restrict that space somewhat to things I can control easily. So in order to restrict the space of observables, I do it by enlarging this space of solutions. So what I'm interested in is the space of distributional solutions. And as such, well, I will denote it by V, it's some vector space sitting inside. Now distributional, so I look at distributions, D prime of M, that's the dual. And I will characterize this space of distributional solutions by the space of polynomials on it. So observables are, in fact, so symmetric algebra. For the moment, I want to talk only about the algebraic tensor product. So this alg will signify it, of V star, so of the dual of V. Okay, and I'm not happy about this as it is. I want to characterize it in a homological way. So do it in DG algebras. Okay, I can do everything in DG algebras, in fact, so that whole algebraic quantum field theory story also generalizes to that setting. And this is, let's say, zero step of the comparison, so bring everything into the DG world. So remark, the AQFT definitions. Generalize to DG versions. But that's not difficult. There are two things I need to do. First, my category is now going to be chain complexes. So replace everything by chain complexes and drop that injective bit and drop this. So that provides, if you now go back, the exercise for the audience is to go back to the notes and make a DG version of the definitions from the first section. So that's it. Well, the axioms now have to hold only on homology. So axioms up to quasi-iso. So we are now in the same world. And actually, it turns out, if you stare long enough at my work and work of Kevin and Owen, we are actually doing exactly the same thing. Although I'm using some completions. So let me then start from the Kevin and Owen side and then see how it leads to the proof of the first theorem. So the obvious bit, so there are some special observables which are linear observables. So these are of this form. So for f, which is a compactly supported function, I define OF of phi is the integral over m of x d mu x. So that's measure of my spacetime. And I can consider regular polynomials. So polynomials, that would be essentially a sim algebraic of d of m. Okay, so for that whole DG story, I will need to resolve this space of observables. A very nice way to do it is by using polyvector fields on the configuration space. So let's say regular polynomial, that's a mouthful, polyvector fields. So I can just take, so this is with a small tilde. Again, this is sim of d of m and the copy of d of m in degree one. Okay, so this is something like looking at the odd cotangent band. This is not enough, in fact. So this needs some completion, and in the work of Kevin and Owen, there was already some completion performed. So let's say the first completion. Replace these nice algebraic symmetric tensor product with something a bit more general. So let me just write it like this. So in degree minus k at u, I take something which is defined as follows. So I take, instead of taking functions on U and tensoring this together, I will take smooth, compactly supported functions on the Cartesian product of U with itself. And it will have symmetric bits and anti-symmetric bits. So I just have an action of the permutation group. And well, I take the symmetrized and anti-symmetrized part. So this I will denote as follows. So you think of it as anti-symmetrized and symmetrized sections, although this is probably a bit too coarse. Okay, so that's the first step. Now, this is almost what I'm talking about. So we're almost on my side of things. So you can think of elements of that space as finite sums of products, completed products of these basic observables. Now, I want to include infinite sums. So the only step which I make is to introduce a topology in which one can take yet another completion and get something where you can also talk about infinite series. This is sometimes useful if you want to have things like exponentials. Okay, so second completion. This is it, so consider the space, which I denote again with this fractured style, polyvector fields, regular on M, which contains also infinite series. And these are convergent with respect to a certain topology. If you want the analytic details, I can give them to you later. Infinite series, convergent in a certain topology. Okay, so we're almost there. What we need is a differential. And the differential is going to be actually the same in my case and in Kevin and Owen case. So I will define it on this algebraic tensor product and extend by continuity. So this is then obviously going to be the same. So differential both cases, I just start with defining it on the generator. So I have product of functions. So this is the symmetric product, and then times the corresponding thing for the anti-symmetric bit. So this leaves in this algebraic guy. So you can also write it like that. So this is sim n and anti-symmetrized m. Sorry. Wow. Cannot write. Of d of m. Okay, and this is defined as follows. I replace these g's by equations of motion elements, and I will give you some sign convention, which might be the correct one. So this is minus one minus I, and now I have the equations of motion bit acting on g I, and then the rest is the same modulo the fact that I have to take g I out g m. This differential is then extended to these two completions. So Right, I can finally write something concrete. Ha. Next time I'm wearing high heels. Should have remembered. Okay, so the DG version of the Poisson, well, the classical field theory in my framework is this. Yeah, with the differential, but the product is obvious. And well, you can see that essentially by construction, this is exactly the completion of what you would get in the Kevin and Owen setting, where well, P of O is then that guy with the differential. Oh, there is also a bracket. Sorry, I'm lying to you. So this is the vector spaces. So I'm forgetting both to the vector spaces because I don't want to talk about the brackets at the moment. So this is forgetful. Or actually, I can just forget to commutative algebras. Forgetful to commutative algebras. Okay. This is the same reason why things are going to work also for the quantum guy on the level of vector spaces. So this proves theorem one. Well, proves in quotation mark. This is just the sketch of the argument. Now, so I'm running out of time. I will skip the proof of theorem two and move to the proof of theorem three. So I just want to show you very briefly how the algebraic structure arises. And forgive me, I will slightly more sketchy. So now the algebraic structure. So the first observation is that the commutative product in the factorization algebra setting is related not to the star product immediately, but is immediately related to the time-ordered product. So A T of O is related to A of O, where O is this causally convex guy. How it is done? Well, here I have to tell you a few more words about structures which are very special for globally hyperbolic spacetimes and normally hyperbolic equations of motion. So note, we have green functions. For P of a particular type, and these are advanced, retarded, so these are advanced, retarded, and with these two I can construct another one. So GD, which is also called the Dirac propagator, which is one half of these, this sum. And I can construct something which is not a green function, but rather a bisolution, which I called GC. And this is retarded minus the advanced. Okay, so using these propagators, I can define explicitly a map which relates this algebra to this as commutative algebras. So and that's the second observation. So there is a map T, which is defined as a certain differential operator on the configuration space arising from this Dirac propagator. So this works as follows. So I differentiate twice with respect to the field and insert the Dirac propagator, factor 1/2. And note the I. This map does two things. So it intertwines the commutative products. So if I have on one side, let's say, polyvector fields, let's do it for the non-completed guy first, delta S. I have to be sure that they make it the right direction. The wrong direction. So T goes to here from something which is in fact the space of quantum observables. So on this side you have the quantum observables, which is related to the Bellinson-Drinfeld algebra structure. So here you have the BV Laplacian. Okay, so first is a cochain map. So it intertwines this differential with that differential. Another thing which is important, it also intertwines the products. So on this side, I have the time-ordered product. So product, and on this side, I have the usual pointwise product. So it plays two roles. So what I can do, I can easily show that A cos M, well, now forgetting to commutative algebras. Actually, forget that. It's also good for the differential. So this is actually the same as A T. So this is quasi iso. The only remaining step is how to relate A T to A, because these are different things. You could imagine that this is easily reconstructed from A using that condition for the time-ordered guys. Now, there is also, I think, relatively simple way of doing the other way. And that's going to be the last thing I say. Sorry for going over time. Okay, so how to get star from T, or rather from the factorization product. Because we haven't even shown that, we can talk about associative products here, or from the factorization product. Which I denote MT. Okay, well, let's do it very concretely. So I have, Sorry, I should restrict it to, well, no, okay, that's fine. That goes actually in general, but right now I will restrict to the Cauchy surface. So this is my neighborhood of the Cauchy surface. And here I have some region U, and I have two observables localized in there. So I have F, G, living in AT of U. Okay, and I want to show how to construct their time-ordered product. And this is where the time slice axiom is absolutely crucial. So because my algebra is locally constant in the time direction, I can happily move one of these observables to the future, and then I don't have problems with taking their product. So let's say I'm here, and because of the time slice axiom, you can consider now another neighborhood of a Cauchy surface in the future, and some neighborhood U plus. And there is a very explicit map. So there is a map beta plus going from, well, let's give it some name, maybe. Okay, so only vector fields together with the differential, a beta plus going from this at region U to this at region U plus. Okay, and this map is a quasi-isomorphism. So the way I define my multiplicative structure, my associative product, in fact, is as follows. So I define F star G. I move F to the future, so beta plus F. I leave G where it was. Now they are localized in disjoint regions. And I take their product using the factorization map. OK, well, that seems like a stupid thing to do. It's very dependent on the choices. But the fact, well, the calculation shows that it actually is not. So it, well, first thing you notice that this because it's locally constant, it doesn't really depend on the choice of the Cauchy surface. That map beta plus isn't quasi-isomorphism. So after some computation, which I clearly don't have time for, you find that this is the same as the F star G modulo the image of delta S, so vanishes in the cohomology. Okay, that's very, very briefly the reason why things work. Details to appear soon. Thank you for your attention and really sorry for going over time.
So I would love to open the floor to questions. I also know that some people want to show up late and to give and talk. But if there are quick questions for Kasia. I do have one question. You said you guys were working on the free scalars.
Mm-hmm.
Have you started looking at the kind of like turning-on interactions?
Mm. So for turning-on interactions, there are two things. So these time-ordered products, these are then used to construct interacting fields. So some of the work is already there because we can relate these. Now, the missing step is the renormalization, because we have to go from these smoothed observables, from what they called regular observables, to local observables. And this amounts to renormalization. And because, well, I think the way to go would be to try to apply the same randomization to both cases and see if it works. So my stuff uses Epstein-Glaser randomization in Lorentzian. There is a version in Euclidean. So I think the sensible thing to do would be to try to recast the renormalized theory in Euclidean using that renormalization scheme. See that it gives the same and then do the comparison. So that's not far off. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing it.
Questions? I guess we should thank Asha again.